The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 564, recorded on February 19th, 2020.
Welcome to the 564th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and the 397th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, you know, I got these new speakers, and apparently the subwoofers are in them, because I'm getting a really deep bass from them. So, I mean, it's not like I don't have that third, you know, that third subwoofer, but I'm getting some deep bass from these Logitechs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're tall. What?
Are you enjoying them?
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, I wish they didn't have to be plugged in. The ones that I had just needed to be, you know, in a USB port, and that's how they got their power. But these guys have to be plugged in, so that's the one drawback.
I like Logitech, like...
Yeah.
Well, my previous speakers are Logitech too.
I'm currently using a Logitech Pro X headset for both gaming and doing this podcast. So I really enjoy it. Like their stuff is just like reliable. It holds on for a long time. And
yeah,
like I have
my speakers held on for 10 years, and they were finally starting to sound like 1963 Ford jalopy speakers. A lot of crackling and buzzing.
That's very specific.
I don't know. Just, you know. But, yeah, the speakers are good, and I like having the volume control right in the front, too. The other ones didn't have that.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, before we get into where we're playing, you know, there's all the news is about, well, we're going to be announcing something later on. It's like all the news is next week's news. I mean, you have the Baldur's Gate 3 reveal that's coming next week. I have other things that are – it's just like boring, you know. I don't want to talk about what might happen next week. We'll just talk about it when it gets there. So, I mean, the point is I think maybe people should start taking more care of how waste from livestock is. But that's – It's a problem, you know, because people like to eat meat. I like to eat meat. I like my pork. But those pigs are releasing so much methane in the air and generating viruses. So we'll see.
That was the whole premise of Dead Rising.
When did Dead Rising come out? 2006? 2007?
I do believe it was 2007.
Jeez, Dead Rising always pissed me the hell off. I did not like the idea of, well, you're going to die and you're going to level up that way. I don't like that concept. It didn't really work for me in Planescape Torment. It's not working for me here, you know. But the problem is that then they made Dead Rising get too easy, in which Dead Rising 4 was a cakewalk.
Yeah. It was 2006.
I mean, I remember because there was... touting the fact that the Xbox 360 could have thousands and thousands of zombies on the screen at once.
Mm-hmm.
The best part about Dead Rising was photographing the zombies. Although I always found it amusing. Oh, look, there's a sexy, in quotations, a sexy picture of a zombie.
There is no such thing as a
sexy picture. It's a zombie it's a corpse in a bathing suit. That's so sexy.
No, it's not.
It's not Jonah's fault that there was actually an erotic points system in Dead Rising's photography mode.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It was weird.
Yeah. I did like the photography mode though. That's a mode I like in a lot of games. Like I liked it in Beyond Good and Evil. You know, just snapping photos. I mean, there's some games that revolve around it, I know. I'm looking at you, hey you Pikachu.
Yeah,
was it
one
Hey
of
You
them.
Pikachu?
There's a
was it called
camera.
Hey You Pikachu? I know there was a thing that was specifically just for smoke for photographing Pokemon, and that
was on
the
N64, I thought.
Pokemon
there's also There was also a horror game, Japanese horror game, where you took pictures of ghosts.
Yeah, like, that's how Fatal you Frame. The American title is Fatal Frame. No, because Hey You Pikachu was the one in which had the Nintendo 64 thing in which you could speak into a mic. Yes. That's why it was called Hey You Pikachu. I don't know if that was the one with the photography element to it.
You're thinking of Pokemon Snap.
You could also take pictures in Breath of the Wild and have the pictures like analyzed, and you could hunt down things that you took pictures of, like a certain animal or monster or item or whatever, and you could look for them with that and have it show up on your map. So another game.
There's a photo-taking element in Final Fantasy XV, which I have no idea how that works. I'm going to have to look it up in the wiki to see if there's a point to it.
There is a huge point to it. Okay. It actually plays huge into the story of the game.
Okay.
but the game you're thinking of is Pokemon Snap. That was basically
Hey You
Pikachu
was the one in which you could talk to Pikachu.
Pokemon Snap was basically an on-rails shooter of Pokemon photography.
I remember seeing the video and photographing Meowth. Anyways, I did a segue there. So Final Fantasy XV, since it's on Xbox Game Pass, I downloaded all of it, and I'm playing the first hour of the game. The combat system is very weird. For one thing, there's just something fundamentally wrong with attacking with a B button and defending with the X button. Because basically, in every other game I've played, B is the defend or movement, while X is attack.
That never bothers me, because I never remember from game to game what...
Well, it bothers me a lot when I'm playing Shadow. Yeah. I'm still playing Shadow of War, and X is attack, and B is
can't you reassign the buttons?
No, and why would I want to?
Well, Final Fantasy VII, you could reassign the buttons.
I'll just have to live with it. That's all. I'm playing on easy mode. I just want to play it for the story. One of the things that interests me is that while there's an open world mechanic, it's not that very open world. I mean, when you're driving, it's basically automatically driving for you, even if you're behind the wheel. And all you get to choose is which way you want to accelerate, decelerate, or turn at turn options, which is fine. I mean, the game is extremely laid back. Even the combat is sort of laid back. I mean, when you're in the car, all you're doing is holding down the right trigger, and they're just in the car chilling. This boy band, and you know, you sort of get this. Yeah, I'm just chilling. I'm just driving the car with my buds. Nothing's happening. We're just enjoying the wind through our hair.
Pretty sure in Final Fantasy VIII you could steer and drive wherever you wanted to when you drove in the car. It just feels wrong, though, having cars in Final Fantasy. It just doesn't feel right.
Why not? I mean, it's Magitek.
The regalia in particular is basically a character in and of itself.
Yeah. The regalia is a cool black sports car.
Yes. But I don't know. You can get out of the car and go wherever you feel like, so there's that.
That's true. I'm just saying when you're driving from point to point, you're not really driving.
Yeah, that's
true. And here's the thing. I don't mind that. I don't mind it at all. I mean, you know, sometimes you need that downtime in a game. And I really like the opening. Not when he's with his father. That just made me roll my eyes so hard. It's when when the car breaks down, and then you have to get out. You have to get to push the car, and just that opening in which you're pushing the car, and the camera's slowly pulling back to show the Americans. This is weird. You know, you have all these Japanese characters, but it takes place in what's sort of like the American Southwest. You know, that little culture weird blending. You know, but I just like that pullback. You know. Remember when I was talking about how Devil May Cry 5, the characters just want to make me want to punch him and slap him in the face?
Uh-huh.
These characters I don't mind at all. Even though they're stock characters, they're extremely stock characters. And the first girl you meet has boobs the size of watermelons. And she's wearing short shorts that I think I could see her labial folds if I really look hard.
Yeah.
But I don't, and she has this heaviest southern accent. American Southern accent is just bizarre, but I find myself not minding because the entire feel of the game is sort of like this is the laid back Final Fantasy, you know, this is the dude bro Final Fantasy, and I don't mind it. Normally I don't like it, but in this case I don't mind it at all.
There are a ton of things that you can do in that game that, like, don't even have anything to do with actually completing it. And I, it's not, and like, it's one of those games where I actually didn't mind doing side quests in that game. I really enjoyed, like, kind of the distractions because they,
Yachty like, Groshaw gave up when the girl told him to make a carrot garden. Said, no, that's going too far.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are a few that are duds, but for the most part, I really didn't mind going through the side quests in that game.
And I like the combat. Once you get used to it, it's kind of smooth. The only thing I don't like is the fact that, for whatever reason, I can't, hook onto when it gives you that Y so you can go all the way to a vantage point. For some reason, it's not working with me. It always wants to attack a monster instead. Even if I'm not locked on one, I'll have to figure out how I'll get used to it. It's just
a little weird at first, but eventually you'll get like partner skills that you.
No,
can,
I've been using those.
And you'll get magic, and you'll get summons, and
I figured that right away. You know, and I will say before it is a very beautiful game. I will say that. And I don't know. There is this obsession with cooking now in a lot of Japanese games, you know, like in Monster Hunter World, the latest one. They try to make the food look as good as possible. The same here, you know, the food looks scrumptious. And, oh, by the way, Cooking Mama is finally coming to the Switch.
Yes.
And it looks good. I mean, Cooking Mama is always good, but I'm just saying it looks really good. I like the way how angry she is if you only get one star. She actually turns into a cacodemon. Her eyes start bleeding blood, it looks like. It's like she's like she just stepped out of Doki Doki Literature Club or something.
Yeah, that's a scary image, all right.
Yeah. But if I was to get a Switch at any point, I'd probably get it for games like Cooking Mama.
Wow, there's a lot of good games on Switch, and
yeah, but a lot of them I already own on PC. I'm talking about games that are uniquely Nintendo, and Cooking Mama's the one that I actually like. I don't like Animal Crossing. I just don't.
I'm not talking about Animal Crossing.
I know. I'm just saying games that are native to Nintendo, that, you know, that aren't on PC. Oh, wait, actually, no, I'm wrong. Or was no Harvest Moon came to PC? It was Harvest Moon, right? Not Animal Crossing. Anyway,
Harvest
we're here.
Moon.
Yeah, we're neither here nor there on that. Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing, speaking of the Switch, I've been playing Star Ocean First Launch. I think it's First Launch or First Story. It's a port of the PlayStation, first PlayStation Star Ocean game onto the Switch, and
is
they remastered it.
Or a Game Pass game, or is it just a game that you bought in the store?
A game I bought in the store.
Oh, okay. So it's a remaster. Because I was wondering, because, you know, you have stuff like Xbox Live Arcade, you know, having old Xbox 360 and all that stuff, you know, I was just wondering if this was something like that. Is it at least remastered?
Yes, it is. They redid the character UI, or, no, the character sprites, or the, you know, that image that comes up when they're talking and they show a picture of them, a little portrait of them. So they have new portraits. I think they redid the music. The cutscenes still look like the old ones from the PlayStation. They just have that very old classic feel. You could tell it's like anime from the 80s, kind of old. It's, you know, it plays basically the same. You are it starts off with the characters on the planet, and there's this disease breakout, and you're met by these outer space people that come take you to this other planet to time travel and try to find the cure in the past kind of thing. So it's a crazy kind of story.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Yes.
No, I see it. It looks marginally better. I mean, the battle graphics look similar to what it was.
Yeah.
But you have these new rendered player heads. Dialogue.
And there's voice acting, so I don't know if the original had that, but this one does.
I think the original did.
Okay, so there's definitely voice acting in this one. That's what else.
Because remember, the Nintendo 64 used carts, and some of them, you know, for them to have the voice, it was like rare.
Yeah. Well, this was a PlayStation game.
Oh, that's right. It was a CD, so maybe it did have a voice. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's very similar to the early games of the series. You get to name your characters. You can customize the little dialogue window. You know, nice little touches like that.
You know, the funny thing is that it may be a PlayStation game, but it looks like a Nintendo game. And I don't think it's because they made it look like a Nintendo game. I think the original looked the same as well.
Yeah.
It did.
I think it's a little cleaner, though. You know, like I said, they did remaster it. I think they did a good job on it, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, the graphics, the battle graphics aren't much different.
Right.
I don't think they had the large heads, though. Yeah, they didn't have the large heads. See, that's the thing that they added.
Okay.
They didn't add the large dialogue heads. So, yeah.
So that's
what else did you say you played?
I've been almost done with Luigi's Mansion 3. I'm going to beat the boss with my daughter. That game is... some of the bosses, you need to really play co-op, or at least it's a lot easier with a second player, because you have to have Luigi go do one task while Luigi is doing a different task. And I'm really enjoying this game because the villain is really just completely upset about how scared Luigi is, but how far he's gotten and taken out these ghosts. And it's really satisfying to see the villain all that pissed off when you have Luigi, you know, winning the day. So that's also enjoyable.
Well, it's like, Mario is the one who's supposed to win. You're supposed to be the wimp.
Says who? You know, he doesn't have to be the wimp. That's the point.
That's how he's always characterized, though.
Yeah.
If he's with Mario, then Luigi becomes the emotional wreck.
He's
the only one allowed to show emotion in the
with?
Family.
Because, I mean, Mario 1 through 4, I don't think he was like that ever, so I don't know where that comes from.
Probably the first Luigi's Mansion, I'd say. Mm. I mean, it's been a while. But
Before that, actually.
Think so?
Yeah, they had to make Luigi different from Mario in some way, so they made him a little taller. And then they just said, well, you know, I can't just have a tall Mario, and he has to be subservient to Mario, so let him be the emotional one. He's the wife. Mario's the husband, he's the wife. And Peach is the woman that Mario's cheating on Luigi with.
Luigi at this point is a straight up demon slayer. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Thank you.
Can I ask you, whatever happened to you know, the other Toads? All the Toads are the same now.
Yeah.
You don't Captain have Mayor Toad anymore. You don't have, you know, you don't have the elderly Toad. You don't have, it's just, now it's just a color swap Toads.
I guess they're like literal sentient mushrooms that just grow into whatever.
Yeah, but they used to have different personalities.
Right. They might grow those personalities if...
No, they don't have them in the games anymore. I'm not talking about, you know...
I don't know.
It's just like... No, it's just like in the games. They just say, you know, no one cares about Toads, so just make them all alike. Save space.
Yeah. It's like
sad.
Clones.
It's sad. How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
So, this week I've been playing Dreams for review. And this comes from Media Molecule, who are the folks behind Little Big Planet. It is interesting. The best way I can think to describe it is if you've ever opened up Photoshop, or rather, maybe like if you've dealt with Photoshop, maybe like think back to the first time you opened it up and just like how daunting it was to have that full toolkit sitting in front of you and all these things that can do all these different functions. It's kind of like that.
They were just ripping off Super Lucky's tail from all the screenshots I've seen of it.
But they're not, because you can literally make anything you want. The whole point of Dreams
Project Spark, in other words.
You can create 3D art, you can create music, you can animate it, you can add textures, you can add effects, you can actually make full-on like video games and little animations in there.
Project Spark.
there was somebody that actually made a rendition of the entire opening sequence of Dead Space and Dreams.
Yeah. I remember when they did Project Spark, they actually recreated Space Invaders and some other games.
Yeah, and
they also included Conquer at the very last moment. It's like, someone could have made a really good Conquer game with Project Spark, but they canceled it.
Yeah. And with this, you can not only like create your own stuff, but you can all explore other people's stuff and what they're creating and like what they've put together. And you can even download some of it to use in your own projects.
Why would they do that when Minecraft already exists?
Minecraft has certain limitations to it.
Not that I've seen. I mean, if you can make a cell phone within Minecraft, then you can do anything.
No, you can do a lot of stuff in Minecraft. It is very cool. But
I understand it. It's mostly creator tools. I get it. But you know, this game was supposed to be released two and a half years ago.
Yeah, but time well spent. I think they did a good job. It's the whole thing about like the creative side is that it's so daunting at first, like how much you can do, like between crafting, sculpting, object manipulation, copying, and all that jazz. But it has maybe some of the best tutorials I've ever seen. That's kind of what drove me away from Photoshop when I first started about it, is that I had no idea how to access and use some of these things. And Dreams does a good job of providing you with like beginner's tutorials to sort of grasp the rudimentary concepts and then guiding you into like deeper concepts like animation and texture.
The only problem I have is that anything that is basically game creation, period, nothing else, tends to fail. I mean, usually you want a game behind the game. You know, have a game and then have the core. Here's, you know, because you have something like Media Molecule's other game.
Little Big Planet.
Little Big Planet. Little Big Planet was a platformer. And the secondary thing was making your own levels, you know.
I think that's true because there's a concept called something paralysis. Too many options, and you just don't know what to pick because there's just too many damn options. So having some sort of game or something give you a guide of what it's supposed to be like.
But it does that. That's what I was talking about, where you can explore the others. Yes, there is.
What's the game?
Because when you go to explore other people's stuff,
but
there's also
here you go again.
Hold your horses, young man.
I'm twice your age. What are you talking about?
There's also
say okay, boomer next time, TJ.
There's also a whole bunch of things collected by Media Molecule that they've put together that is basically that what you're talking about right there. It's a whole bunch of collections of animations, games you can play, experiences, and there's like objects that you can earn from playing through Media Molecule's stuff for your own
missions. Except the core gameplay loop seems to be, just exploring, getting more content.
So the core gameplay
loop. That's exactly what Project Spark did.
So the core gameplay loop of one of the Media Molecule experiences I played with was it was a game that they created that was like a point-and-click adventure. Then it was a platformer. Then it was a side-scrolling shooter. Then it was an on-rails shooter for a bit.
And it has no core game concept.
And the whole point of it was that you can do all that stuff. Like, you can make all that stuff. And there are other things like it that Media Molecule puts out and is going to continue to put out
Like I said, you know, games that are like that usually don't work. Project Spark, Game Maker, you know. I mean, at least RPG Maker has a core game concept, and that is role-playing games. And you make role-playing games, and other people's role-playing games are big, and they're available. When you do a potpourri thing like this, like Project Spark tried and like Game Maker did, it's just people say, okay, you have to have that core gameplay loop for people to want to deal with, you know. So I don't know if this is going to work because, hey, you know what? It may inspire, you know, like a small number of people, like a couple hundred people to start making games. They're impressive. I hope you're able to, by the way, export these games so that they are standalone.
Yeah, I mean, like, the point that...
What I'm trying to... That doesn't require Dreams to play.
I don't know if they'll do that.
Well,
maybe.
Game Maker did that, and so did... Oh, what was the name? D&D Unlimited Adventures, and the Bar Sale Construction Kit, and Adventure Construction Kit. All of them allowed you to create, you know, standalone games that the people didn't need the game to play them, you know, and that's what kept them alive for a while. But now you're expecting people to buy Dreams, and they're not sure what they want. Like I said, is it free at least?
No, well, but like I don't think they've been. I don't think they've been coy about what it is. It is literally like a.
No, I get that. But if it was free, then I could see. You know, yeah, people will just download the client and then they'll play other people's games. You know, and you could pay for downloading content. You know. But here, I don't know. I don't know if that concept's going to work. It's going to be like, oh, this is really cool for like 3 months, and then people will just forget.
I think it's good enough to work. I think it has everything that things like Mario Maker has.
They said the same thing about Project Spark. And the difference with Mario Maker is that it's a platforming game, and they actually gamified the game making in that. You know, Super Mario Maker isn't make anything you want. It's make platform games and download other people's platform games. You know what you're getting. You know, like I said, the potpourri, you know, the do everything generally doesn't work.
I disagree. Well, like, I think there's enough there that between Media Molecule and the people that are actually making stuff for it, that there you don't even like really have to create yourself if you don't want to. You can just play with other people's stuff. And then there's the fact that if you do want to create stuff, there's a lot there for you to look at, and you can take those ideas back to your own world and fiddle with them.
You ever heard of that horse that starved to death being between two equidistant bales of hay?
Yeah, no.
Okay. That's the point, though.
I don't know. I feel like... bales
look,
are pretty close together
it,
in this case.
Have fun with it, but I'm just saying, I don't... Microsoft really tried hard with Project Spark. They pumped money and years into it before they finally gave up.
But, like, did Project Spark ever actually launch?
Oh, yeah, it launched.
I don't remember it ever, like, doing anything. I don't even know what Spark...
Well,
I didn't even know...
You're making my point for me there, TJ.
But I like knew what Dreams did before I went in there.
Well,
I had prior information.
I mean, I knew what Project Spark did too. And Project Spark was pretty easy. I mean, you could just create the world by just gouging out thing with a tool and all that stuff. I get it. But you know, creation tools of this sort, it's not the hardcore, you know, programming language. It's a soft, you know, game making thing. It doesn't have a core gameplay loop. People will say, "What do I need this for?"
Creation. From my experience, it literally is like a video game Photoshop.
Okay.
And for that matter, what's up?
I said okay.
And for that matter alone, I think that like there are a lot of things that you can do with it, a lot of things you can share with it.
I don't disagree.
I definitely don't think it's for everyone.
Well,
but I do think that it's going to be an interesting landscape.
You know, a year from now we'll discuss this and you'll be shaking your head and saying, why didn't people latch on to this? It's so cool. It's so great. Not every great idea gets latched onto. You know, this is why I think the fact that Kerbal Space Program actually has been a hit. I mean, it did have a core concept, but Jesus Christ, that was complicated as hell, and yet people still attach themselves like that like nothing else.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I hope it does well, because it's really, really cool. Like, the way that that you can fiddle with it. I have a bunch of ideas I want to start putting together in it, and I'm probably going to keep going back to it every weekend or so.
Yeah,
and that's the first time I felt
that
way.
You can't export the game itself and just, you know, distribute it among friends.
Now, I'm hearing that eventually Dreams may come to PC, and when that happens, they may explore that.
Well, Project Spark was on PC, too. Like I said, we'll see. But I think the main thing is that you should be able to, in a software like this, if you're not able to export a game so that it can run independently of the other software, then there's no point. Expecting someone else to own the software in order to play it, that's a barrier. That's a real barrier.
That's true. I mean, if you can export the stuff yet.
Look at RPG Maker. You export that stuff and people are selling their games on Steam. You can tell an RPG Maker game on Steam just by looking at one screenshot. You look, that's RPG Maker. That reminds me, I still have to get a visual novel creator. I still want to make a visual novel. I want you guys to play my visual novel. I have to decide if I want it to be R or NC-17. Anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Gaming flashback is Limbo this week. Limbo is a puzzle platform game, a video game developed by independent studio Playdead. The game was released in July 2010 on Xbox Live Arcade and has since been ported to several other systems, including the PS3 and Microsoft Windows. Limbo is a 2D side-scroller incorporating a physics game that governs, or a physics system that governs environmental objects and the player character. The player guides an unnamed boy through dangerous environments and traps as he searches for his sister. The developer built the game's puzzles, expecting the player to fail before finding the correct solution. Playdead called the style of play trial and death, and used gruesome imagery for the boy's deaths to steer the player from unworkable solutions. The game is presented in black and white tones, using lighting, film grain effects, and minimal ambient sounds to create an eerie atmosphere often associated with horror genre. Journalists praise the dark presentation, describing the work as comparable to film noir and German expressionism. Based on its aesthetics, reviewers classified Limbo as an example of video games as an art form. Limbo received positive reviews, but its minimal story polarized critics. Some critics found the open-ended work to have deeper meaning that tied well with the game's mechanics, while others believed the lack of significant plot and abrupt ending detracted from the game. A common point of criticism from reviewers was that the high cost of the game, relative to its short length, might deter players from purchasing the title. But some reviews proposed that Limbo had an ideal length. The title was the third highest selling game on the Xbox Live Arcade service in 2010, generating around 7.5 million in revenue. So I guess those people that said it was too short and that would deter people from wanting to buy the game were completely wrong.
Well, here's the thing. Xbox Live Arcade for the Xbox 360... every single game that was at XBLA had a demo.
Mm-hmm.
And people played the demo of Limbo and liked it a lot and then shelled out the money. That's why I bought Braid. I started the demo, the theme music came on, and then I just plunked down the money immediately and said, yes, I want this.
Yeah.
I didn't even play the game. I said, yeah, this aesthetic is a game that I want to play. And that's a lesson to people out there. Demos. Let's get demos back in vogue again. I like demos. Allow you to play the game a little bit before you decide to buy.
I fully agree that helped it out. But I also think that Limbo had some serious staying power because it did well on every system that it went to.
It had tremendous word of mouth. I remember when the first trailer for Limbo came out, there was nothing like it. There was nothing like Limbo when it first came out. And you had dark games, but you didn't have one... As the text says, the German expressionism, you know, you have him and his little glowing eyes and he's running and the music, there is very little music. It's sort of like one of those low, you know, horror hums, you know, and
yeah.
Everybody remembers their first encounter with the spider. Everybody remembers the spider from that game.
Yes.
And the fact that you could only do one of three things, go forward, go back, or jump.
Yeah. I would say that there were some games like Limbo, because I think I forget if it's called Another World. the sci-fi one where this little monster is chasing you around, and I think After Dark or something. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was called.
I think it's called Another World.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Another World, that it reminds me of that, although it wasn't black and white.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Another World. It was bright and colorful.
Yeah.
This was game was monochromatic, and it used the that monochromatic to have some really gory stuff happen. But
I think
not overly gory.
It was. I think it was a good game. I liked the art style, and I liked not having an in-your-face story. You had to figure it out on your own. It was mostly about the platforming challenges.
People still debate what the ending meant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another one that you were thinking of, I think, Scott, was Heart of Darkness.
Go ahead.
It was very similar to Another World, and actually I think it had one of the same directors. That said, Limbo
Heart
ended
of Darkness,
up...
again, was bright and colorful. This game was monochromatic, and it...
Oh yeah, you're right. I this game was definitely distinct in its style. I think it was more like in a gameplay sense. These games are all very simplistic in their form and how you interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about Limbo was the puzzles. The puzzles were extremely organic. They all made sense. And here's the thing: when I first played Limbo, I didn't die for quite a while because, duh. I mean, I got what you were supposed to do. So I wonder if I can do this, you know?
I think the first time I died was the bear trap because I didn't know what I was looking at.
First. I got the second bear trap got me because I didn't see it.
And then there's the bear trap that swings on the rope.
Well, that's the one I avoided. I could see that one coming a mile away. There are other stuff, you know, that I didn't see coming. But this game started an entire genre of big-headed kids running in a dark environment.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of copycats. I don't know if you could consider Braid a copycat, but Braid had the same aesthetic. You know, in terms of something off about it, and, you know, sort of like a hipster Mario.
Yeah. Ultimately, the title won several awards from industry groups after its release and was named one of the top games for 2010 by several publications. Playdead's next title, Inside, was released in 2016 and revisited many of the same themes presented in Limbo.
Bullshit.
Why do you say that?
The only thing those two games had in common was that you played a kid and you could run backwards and forwards and jump. That was the only thing in common. That Inside was batshit insane.
It was.
And at least, you know what? The big difference between the kid in Inside and the kid in Limbo was at least the kid in Inside knew how to swim.
Yeah, that's true. But they both end on, like, similar notes of what the fuck just happened.
Well, no, here's the thing. You know, Limbo had enough information in the ending to get you the idea of what happened. He finds his corpse. His sister is there, I think. And you get the impression that one of them accidentally killed the other?
See, I got something entirely different. I got the idea that they died in a car crash and were thrown through a windshield.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Limbo compared to Inside was black and white, pun intended. It was obvious. Inside ending, you know what? Spoiler for a game that's 5 years old. Had you becoming a giant testicle with arms and limbs sticking out, unless you got, I don't know if it's the real ending or not, or an alternate ending, in which you shut off, just like the slaves in the background. So you get the impression, well, I think he's a scientific experiment that's sort of gotten away from the other scientists. Maybe? I don't know why he turned into a giant testicle with arms and legs, but...
Yeah, it was like some sort of flesh creature that was composed of a whole bunch of other bodies.
I mean, I get the impression that the creature was created because they added a new gameplay mechanic, but still.
I have no idea. It's
but
weird.
Here's a poser for you. Whose environment was more oppressive? The one in Inside or the one in Limbo?
That's tough.
That is tough, because you have the dark imagery of what's going on. You can... kind of see it a lot more clearer, that all these strange monsters coming after you. But there's something about dark shadows of things coming at you, and you can't see all the details. So, yeah. But which one? I don't know which one's more oppressive. They both feel equally dark.
Well, there is something has people shooting at you, and yeah. You have zombies, and you know, it's a little more colorful. Limbo is just like a bad nightmare.
Yeah, I will compare two exact moments that like make me incredibly squeamish in both games. There is something absolutely grisly in Inside when you go through the hydraulic presses and miss and get mashed into like and like the goo of your body like
Fortunately, I never died that way inside.
Like, but there is something absolutely ghastly and grisly about like the little boy's goo like dripping off the ceiling when the press comes down. Yeah. That is terrifying and horrible, and like in my nightmares still about like being crushed by something. But like, there's also that part, and like comparably, the part in the Inside that bugs me the most is when you're swimming and those freaking dolls with the hair catch you and drag
you. Wait, you know that reminds me. You know, both games had things that would attach to your head and took control of you.
Yeah, but like when you get caught by the dolls swimming in the water that will drag you down and drown you, that is also terrifying. And it's specifically. Yes, and Inside.
That girl, oh god, I hated her.
And specifically when you fucking are in the submarine and she'll break out the window and come inside with you. That is, I hate it. I hate it so much. It's awful.
You know, Playdead does a lot of things, but they have the perfect timing so that even if you're perfectly getting away from it, there'll always be like, you always feel like one small move and they got you.
Yeah, and so like I think... For Inside, it's the implied effect versus – or I'm sorry. For Limbo, it's the implied effect versus Inside, which is like the blatant effect of the visuals that you're looking at.
You know, actually, Limbo does have one fuck yeah moment, and that's when you finally kill the spider. You don't have any fuck yeah moments in Inside. But when you kill the spider in Limbo, you're like, yeah, take that, you piece of shit.
So I guess then maybe that answers the question, because on
Although
Inside...
what you do to the spider is kind of horrific.
Yeah, but you get some satisfaction, whereas on Inside, it's just one WTF moment after another that leads you to that tumor sitting on the beach, and you're like, what just happened?
I would say that there is arguably a fuck yeah moment in Inside, and that's when you just straight up plow into the CEO's office and mash him into paste on the and crash out the window with him and mash him into paste on the floor. But it is satisfying to be like, you know, fuck you.
I was thinking of him more as a tuma. He's a tuma.
They're such strange games, and I hope the Playdead makes more.
Yeah, well, you know, Playdead seemed... By the way, I figured out the ending to Limbo before I even started the game because the company named themselves Playdead. I mean, you're sort of giving away the game there, aren't you?
A little bit, yes.
But, yeah, I mean, everybody's looking forward to whatever Playdead comes up with next. I think I remember them talking about their next game. Let me look this up because... Right. Last year they started releasing some artwork from their next game, and that's about it. So there is something coming. I don't know if it's coming this year. It would be nice if it came this year. But they started in 2016, and the images remind me a little bit, at least in terms of tone color, to Lone Sails. Is Far Lone Sails? You know that game, right? That's the game in which you're in a gigantic Mad Max-style vehicle, and you have to keep feeding it energy so that it keeps on going down this road.
So, no, like, I've never played that one. I've never played that one.
You never played Far Lone Sails? Check it out. It's one of those indie darlings. I think it's okay. I don't think it's great, but it does have a lot of atmosphere to it. You can just look at a video of Far Lone Sails.
Okay.
But it does remind me of that. I will say, though, they're going with a really realistic view this time. I mean, both Limbo and Inside were basically, you know, a little expressionistic. The kid in this new game looks like a kid, you know, looks like a photograph of a kid. I mean, it's far away. The camera's far away, so you can't really make out any features, just that he's wearing a hoodie. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what kind of... I mean, if they come up with something straightforward, I don't know if I'll be disappointed or ecstatic. Or maybe both at the same time. Because after Limbo and Inside, I'm sort of inured to their batshit crazy. Or maybe it'll be normal until the last 95% of the game, which goes batshit crazy. Although, actually, Inside, it was batshit crazy. Holy fucking shit, this is goddamn bonkers in the past 5 years of the game.
That's a very apt description for Inside.
Anyways, yeah, if you haven't played Limbo, it's like, what, $5 now? You can get it on Steam, you can get it on every platform imaginable. Isn't it on... It should be on Switch by now, shouldn't it?
It probably is. Let me see. I can Google that.
The problem... Yeah, it's on Switch. The problem with Limbo, though, is that it is like playing Zelda. You've played it a million times. Do you really want to play it again?
It's not like Zelda. But
I'm just saying, everybody's played the first Zelda over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, you know, some people do. Some people do.
So, yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm going to put this in big quotes. The story of Limbo is entertaining enough. I mean, it's like watching a movie, especially if you know where everything is.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, yeah, here's the spider again. Here's the... by the way, Dorkly did this video about Limbo, in which they gave the kid a flashlight, and when he turns on the flashlight, it shows what he's really seeing, and everything is candy-coated and sweet and nice behind the veneer of dark and depressing. You should look that up. I think it's Dorkly. Either that or College Humor. No, it's Dork. It's just go to YouTube and look for Limbo with a flashlight. Anyways, we're going to move to our first news item. Sony breaks PS5 pricing tradition for Xbox Series X launch. And this comes from Yahoo Finance. And you know, when I'm looking at Yahoo Finance, it's like this is a lot of technical stuff coming up. According to a Bloomberg report, Sony Corporation is facing high manufacturing costs of the PlayStation 5, with scarce components and erratic supply of raw materials compounding its problems to set a balanced retail price. Oh, you know what? TJ, look there. You know, imagine how much worse the coronavirus is going to make that.
Yeah.
In addition, the impending launch of the Xbox Series X by arch-rival Microsoft has forced the company to adopt a waiting game in its price-setting decision to avert being too overpriced. However, with the PS5 launch on the horizon, and probably going to be this year, no? I mean... they're not going to announce it at E3 because they're not going to be at E3. They have their own thing. So I imagine they're going to be announcing it, you know, this year, this summer, and then releasing it this year. Sony had earlier disclosed the product features of the upcoming model with various market teasers, revealing its several hardware enhancements. These include a faster hard drive that will significantly reduce or eliminate load times. Thank you, solid-state drives. Thank you very much. You're a welcome addition. A 4K Blu-ray drive and a more adaptive controller. What the hell does that mean? Are they saying it's going to be like the Elite controller in which you can take stuff off or change the...
I thought they said this was like backwards compatible with PS4 or something.
Who cares if it's backwards compatible? I mean, my Xbox 360 controller works on the Xbox One. Anyways, the company is also reportedly splurging on a cooling system to ensure that heat dissipation from powerful chips inside the console does not cause any issue for gamers. Traditionally, Sony finalizes the pricing of a console scheduled to be released in a particular year in February and follows it up with a mass production in spring. With the PS5, the company, however, is likely to deviate from this pattern and employ a cat-and-mouse approach. Various insiders familiar with the proceedings have revealed that the dearth of a steady supply of DRAM and NAND flash memory due to the burgeoning demand from 5G smartphone manufacturers. See, those are the real competitors right there. The 5G smartphones. That's what everybody actually is fighting right now. Has escalated the production cost of the PS5 to around $450 a unit. Experts opine that this is likely to force the company to set a retail price at $470 per unit with a similar profit margins of that of a PS4. This, in turn, is likely to make it hard to sell, as even the most expensive console of Sony to date, the PS4 Pro at $400 per unit, is often discounted to generate sales. I could have sworn the PS3 had the two SKUs. One was $500, the other one was $600. You remember that?
Yeah, I think it... Yeah, one was... I thought one was fully compatible, and that was the more expensive one.
No, I think it had something to do with the hard drive space. Or maybe it was the Blu-ray... whatever. Anyways, they had two SKUs, and one was outrageously expensive. Moreover, the imminent launch of the Xbox Series X by Microsoft has forced Sony to hold back its pricing decision. Sony has reportedly shelved plans to develop a new mirrorless camera this year owing to the constrained DRAM supply. The company is instead focusing on the launch of the PS5, keeping their pricing factor under wraps. Now, we were talking last week about how Microsoft considers Sony and Google their main competitors. We're about to find out why Microsoft thinks that. Meanwhile, Amazon has forayed into the gaming domain with its nearly $1 billion acquisition of Twitch, a leading live service streaming platform for gamers. Alphabet's Google gaming platform, Stadia, has also outsmarted rivals by enabling users to stream games online on any device like smartphones, laptops, desktops, and tablets, or on televisions with the aid of Chromecast Media Stick connection without shelling out extra money for expensive gaming consoles and PCs. With rivals creating such significant inroads in the gaming domain, critics wonder whether Sony's PS5 gamble will be worth it. Now, we talked last week about Microsoft not viewing Sony as a competitor, and instead Google and Amazon. And here's the thing that Microsoft has. They're not relying on console sales anymore to make their money. They're actually doing Game Pass and all these other... What was that?
Sound like Scott letting his dog in.
Oh. Anyway, that's okay. They're talking about Game Pass, and one of the things that we spoke about, and I think this was 2 weeks ago, is that Microsoft will not be enforcing the Xbox Series X games, in that the first-party games will take advantage of the Xbox Series X, but they'll be available for all the Xbox Ones, you know, the Xbox One, the Xbox One S, and the Xbox One X. While Sony, all first-party games are going to be for the PS5 only, and they're going to phase out the PS4 as soon as possible. So Microsoft is less concerned about the console and more concerned about the software and the Game Pass. Sony is concerned with console sales, and they're really going to try and force people to upgrade from the PS4 to the PS5 as soon as possible.
The only way I'm going to upgrade to the PS5, and I know they're not going to do this, so you don't have to say that they're not going to. I already know they're not going to, but if they fully backwards compatible library, but again, they're not going to do it, so I don't see myself buying a PS5.
Well, here's the thing. What if... here's the thing. You also have to consider PSN. So... What I'm hoping Sony might do is that all of the purchases you made on the PSN for the PlayStation 4 will be available for the PS5 versions.
I would imagine that would be. I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Sony is notorious for making you pay for the same crap over again.
Yeah, but that would be really, really stupid and dickish.
So I just feel like it would be not that difficult to make... if they really wanted to put in the effort, and I just think that's what it is, they don't want to put that effort in, to have a fully backwards compatible library and put in features to have, like, save states wherever you want, and just, you know, I think they could do it, but they obviously, I don't think they want to. They want to.
The original PS3, if I remember correctly, actually was completely backwards compatible with the PS2 because they basically stuck a PS2 inside it. So,
but then apparently they stopped doing that, I guess, and all the ones that were fully compatible, backwards compatible, have like a yellow ring of death or whatever it's called, and it doesn't work anymore, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, last week we talked about the fact that Sony is renting server space from Microsoft now, cloud space. And I'm wondering, what if with a PSN subscription, you could stream PS4 games, or maybe not even PS4 games, PS3 games, and PS2 and PS1 games.
It just seems strange because I'll log in to my PlayStation 3 and it'll tell me what games I've purchased. But if I log into the PlayStation 4 and it's the same account, it'll say it won't show the games that I've purchased on PS3, but it'll show the ones that I've purchased for PS4, but it won't like for instance, Breath of Fire 4 is on PS3, but it's not on PlayStation 4. So it doesn't even like list this game as downloadable and playable. But if I go like the PSN network or my GOG, it'll show that game on my account. And so I just don't see why Sony can't
Sony's
incorporate.
Working from old rules. Yeah. I mean, the reason why they put this in heavy quotation marks, one, with the PS4 was that Microsoft got too full of themselves and tried to start doing internet machines, you know, and people were not ready for it, and frankly, the country wasn't ready for it because we don't have a good internet, internet in this country, to all.
No, my internet has dropped 5 times during this call. That's
I'll tell
how
you
bad
about
it is.
No internet whatsoever, or people have to get their internet from satellites, which is the worst possible way. But I'm just saying, and Microsoft just did a complete marketing blunder, which is why Don Matrick is gone and Phil Spencer is in, you know. And in hindsight, thank God for that. Because screwing up so badly, Microsoft was forced into doing consumer-friendly stuff. You know, they were forced into doing backwards compatible. They were forced into Game Pass. They were forced to do all these interesting things that are very consumer-friendly. And oh, by the way, the PS3 screwing up so badly forced Sony into doing friendly stuff on the PS3. Like the PSN Game Pass, their own version of the Game Pass, or at least getting free games every month. And unlike Microsoft at the time, the games that Sony was giving for the PS3 when they were struggling were top-notch games. You know, they were like 6-month-old games. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see because technologically we're coming to a point in which consoles are just going to melt. It's not going
to
be the same.
Consoles seem to be becoming.
They're going to be like the
C64. Full-on computers. Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember the glory days of the C64, which was a console and a computer at the same time. Just like the Amiga was a console and a computer at the same time. I mean, you could say the same thing about Apple II, maybe, but it didn't have cartridges. Or the Apple 400 and 800. You know, you had these systems which were both consoles and computers, you know, entertainment systems. And we're getting that back again. And the only question is, how soon before we're basically all using PCs just with different brands on it and different first-party software that was, you know what's going to happen, don't you know? First-party software for a system, I think in 10 years, will be exclusive to that system for like a year, and then they'll release it on other systems. Microsoft's already doing it with the Switch. They're doing it with Cuphead. They're doing it with Ori. I mean, you know, the games that they think will sell on the Switch. Unfortunately, they still have this idea of the Switch as a baby machine, you know, as a candy-coated, you know. Games that belong on the Switch are games like Mario, so we'll put Cuphead and we'll put Ori, you know. But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, Microsoft is already saying, you know what? Hey, Nintendo, we'll release these games on it so long as we're able to use Xbox Live on it. And Nintendo said, sure. So those games are Xbox Live enabled, even though they're not active. And I know a lot of Switch owners would say, yes, please, give us Xbox Live. Please. You know, we want a good
I do wonder about
online
that control
multiplayer. What?
I do wonder about the PS5 controller a little bit, because what's going on around right now is that Corsair, the peripheral company, bought SCUF, who makes one of the essentially the most top line PlayStation controller out there. And right after that happened, PlayStation or Sony put out like three different patents for controllers.
Yeah, one of them has a touchscreen on it.
One of them has a touchscreen on it. One of them has buttons, bottom triggers on the back of the controller.
Yeah.
And then there's a few different things that they're talking about. And many believe that, like, when they say adaptable, they're talking about more of like a SCUF type controller to sort of.
Here's the thing: if you're gonna make a new feature on a controller, you know. You don't need to put extra buttons on it because why not just get a flight stick? No, a touchscreen would be a great idea. And it's also, you know, for handicapped people, a touchscreen would be great.
Well, the SCUFs actually are used by a lot of pro players I think SCUF is like the official controller of the Call of Duty League, which is basically, yeah, a lot of different esports players that play on PS4 use SCUF. I don't know if it's PlayStation trying to sort of corner their own market on pro controllers, but I could see it happening, especially considering the timing of their patents immediately after SCUF was purchased by Corsair.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it's going to replace Rumble with haptic.
Yes.
I don't know how to feel about that.
I don't even really know that much. How much of a difference would haptic be from Rumble?
Well, I mean, so Rumble is just two things in your controller just going back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
Haptic is when you touch something and it gives you sort of like a buzz back, like when you're on your cell phone, you know.
Hmm.
Every time you touch it, it gives you a little bit of a fuzz back.
I see.
So sometimes a lot of people I know turn it off because it's annoying. But, you know, I'd rather have a Rumble than haptic if it's a controller. I don't know. So the main point here is that it looks like the PS5 is going to be in the $470 to $500 range, which was what the Xbox One X was. Actually, the original Xbox One and the Xbox One X. So they're looking at a relatively expensive console. Although I wonder how expensive it is with inflation. See, I wonder how much of that is inflation. Although I think it's more like $450 like 5 years ago. And they're going to try and force people to play to buy the new console because the first-party games are going to not be only PS5. So, we'll see how much. Price is always the number one thing with selling a console. To tell you the truth, you know, it doesn't matter how good. If it's a lower price, then people will buy that. You know, as long as it has the games. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Next in No Man's Sky, an organic spaceship you can grow from an egg. This is from PC Gamer. Hello Games is on the brink of releasing yet another free update to Space Sandbox No Man's Sky. And this one is already looking like the weirdest update yet. It's called the Living Ship Update, or the Moya from Farscape, and will introduce new biological ships to No Man's Sky. Players will not only be able to fly these organic ships, but actually hatch them from eggs and grow them to adulthood. They grow from babies into adults and then fly around. In addition, new and strange points of interest will begin appearing in the solar system as you explore the galaxy, including odd pulsing energy orbs, interesting and intimidating space stations, and one screenshot shows a gigantic space skull floating in orbit. While you're exploring, you might also run into new space NPCs, vendors who will hail your ship and trade with you, need help, or provide other, perhaps menacing interactions. That the concept of a growing your own ship sounds pretty awesome. I think that's like in fantasy, you know, you
sort of,
have your
like,
castle.
Sort of like Minecraft-ish or Pokemon-ish. But hey, you know,
No
Man's Sky was a disaster. It was released back in August 2016, and 4 years later, they keep working on this thing. It's like their shitty launch forced them into making people realize, you know, we're actually good developers. We did Joe Danger.
Yeah. I think they've improved it. I've heard that they, you know, did make it better, and the sound's interesting. This is definitely not Pokemon or Minecraft, having a living ship. I know in Farscape, the TV show, there was a living ship, and I think Star Trek had a few.
Yeah, the very first episode was a living
around.
Ship.
Right.
Encounter at Farpoint was a living ship.
Right. I don't know if you. Yeah. So there was a living
and then
alien.
Had the other one with the guy who was a Betazoid and
yeah,
preferred be, it was
one.
Called Tin Man, and he bonded
yeah.
this living ship. There was another episode in which they had to sour the milk.
So yeah, I mean that is an interesting thing to introduce in the game because I don't think we've seen that in games yet.
We
grow
you know
your
what?
Own ship.
Here's the thing: this is a procedurally generated game.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's gonna, you know, everything's gonna be, you know, oh damn, I forgot the term. You know, I don't want to say organic because that's just, but you know. Things are things just happen, and it'll be interesting to see what random events happen because of this.
Yeah,
right.
So, TJ, what is your impression of Hello Games? Is a little journey from 2016 to now.
I think it's great. I think I think they really kind of pulled the game back from like disaster territory into something that's kind of come into its own. It's like just
agreed.
It's a relaxing game that you just go out and explore space in, which is always what it was supposed to be, but like
at
they've
$60,
really
it was a $30 game that was being sold for $60,
but they really like formed it into something more than it was when it started. And now it like
let's all remind ourselves that every single major update that's come out, every single expansion has been free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now you've got VR support. You've got the updates like this organic ship update. You've got these little previously they released a music box, which was just like a straight up full on music program that you could synthesize beats and create musical tracks in. And they just stuck that in the game. You just like here you go make your music. Go make theme music for your home base.
Yeah,
and
they added the multiplayer. And, you know, this is a sort of game in which I would love to be able – I think their next update should be able to build your own permanent bases that other players can visit.
Yeah.
Have your own planet that you can build up any way you like.
But this is neat. I like the – I like the idea of like just like a full on like themed set of DLC that you don't even have to pay for. It's cool to think about. Like it's not just like a ship. There's also organic technology that you have to discover
yeah.
to upgrade the ship because it's of course you can't just stick your old technology in there.
Yeah, and when you have a when you have the vendors and all that stuff, now you have the organic vendors and everything works differently.
So you'll get these quests, you'll get these vendors, you'll get these new interactions. That's great.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Xbox Game Pass will get. Xbox Game Pass for PC will get Yakuza 0, Two Point Hospital, and more soon. Five more games are on the way to Xbox Game Pass for PC, the subscription-based service that offers unlimited access to more than 150 games. Microsoft said today that Indivisible, Reigns, Game of Thrones, Two Point Hospital, Wasteland Remastered, and Yakuza 0 will be added to the lineup soon, presumably later this month.
Yeah, I already pre-downloaded Wasteland Remastered, and it looks pretty good. it's nothing really, really fancy. It's more like, say, a step and a half beyond Fallout 2 in looks. Maybe just one step beyond Fallout. And I haven't played the original Wasteland in a very long time, so it'll be a treat to do. I already own Two Point Hospital, Steam Hospital. I haven't played Indivisible or obviously not Reigns. And just from Zero Punctuation's review of Yakuza 2, I want to try that out at some point. Yakuza 0, I mean.
Yakuza games are a trip.
Yeah.
Two Point Hospital is a game I need to play at some point.
Oh,
I
yeah.
really.
Did you ever play Theme Hospital?
I haven't.
Okay. It's Theme Hospital. It is just Theme Hospital, and it has the same humor. Like in the original Theme Hospital, you had a condition called bloaty head, in which you took the patient with this balloon head, and you would take them to this chair, and they would pop their head and then reinflate it to cure them.
Hmm.
It has the same sort of humor in this game, but the point is though is that the strategy is still very deep, and you still have to. And everything is about building the rooms in your hospital and hiring the right people and all that stuff, and just getting things flowing. It's it's like Settlers. It's just really, really fun. So yeah, I definitely now I'm pretty positive that the reason why Two Point Hospital is there is because it has a crap ton of DLC now. So it's sort of like, yeah, play the game for free, but you gotta pay for that DLC if you want to play it.
But, like, the base game is still pretty good.
Yeah, the base game is really good. I mean, I don't play it these days because, there's so many things going on. But it's a game I can always come back to. So, yeah.
I'll have to give it a go at some point because there's nothing about it that doesn't look cool to me.
Yeah. Do either of you have Xbox Game Pass?
No, I don't.
Okay, so here's the thing. It's still technically in beta, so you can get a subscription for $1. And if you only do Xbox Game Pass for PC, it's $5 a month.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Right now it's $1 for 3 months, I think it is. And then it's $5 afterwards. I'm doing the entire Game Pass Ultimate, because I still have Xbox Live, so I might as well. I mean, basically, what Ultimate did was take gold and it made gold and the game and Game Pass the same price as playing for gold, and Game Pass for PC was just a nice little bonus. And I'm really happy for it too, because it's a lot easier for me to play a lot of my Xbox games on my PC. I'm finding myself now that I have a really powerful rig, I'd rather play Middle Earth: Shadow of War on my PC than I do on my Xbox One, because my Xbox One is busy playing YouTube videos. And I will say this: YouTube on PC fucking sucks, because they have ads every 2 seconds. On the Xbox app and on console apps, the advertisements are a lot less. Lot less frequent. I don't know if you guys ever do YouTube on
I do Chromecast.
What?
I do it on Chromecast, and that turns off all the ads.
Oh, okay. That's cool. But I'm just saying, on console, it's like they it brings down the, because if I'm on PC, if I'm doing YouTube from PC, it's like every 2 seconds I have to get up and press skip ad, and these friggin' ads. I don't know why. 45-minute ad, 10-minute ad. God damn it. You wonder what happened to all those 30-minute ads on TV, those paid subscription, those paid advertisement shows. They all went to YouTube. And I'm sorry, I don't want to watch your shitty sitcom pilot on because it's shitty. The balls of interrupting my video to insert your friggin' sitcom, an entire episode, I might add, a 45-minute. Why would I care? And it's desperate. It's really terrible. It's getting bad reviews. I guess that's why they're forcing it on YouTube. See if there's any. I'm going off on this show. I really shouldn't. So yeah, I think Wasteland Remastered is supposed to come out next week.
Yeah. Wasteland 3 isn't too far around the corner either.
Nope, I backed that. I backed.
I'm so excited to play it.
Oh, the trains. Well, speaking of anticipating games, it just reminded me. That I think there's going to be a Tunic announcement at PAX East, TJ.
Finally. Possibly. And then finally, that fox can catch up to Super Lucky's tail.
Yes.
Super Lucky's Tale is already on the Switch, damn it.
Well, I mean, like, as far as things are going right now, I think Tunic is doing a little better than Super Lucky's Tale.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
know,
not fair.
We could all
I really like Super Lucky's Tale, and I like the effort that those folks put into it. And it's a real shame that they had to shut down their studio. But, oh well.
For a moment, I got them confused with the guys who did Yooka-Laylee. They both
have
the same
Playtonic,
basically. Yeah.
Playtonic is still kicking around.
Well, yeah, Playtonic actually did their version of Donkey Kong Country, which is a lot better, than the original Yooka-Laylee.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, excuse me, Game Pass, Xbox Game Pass for PC, it's worth it.
It is looking better and better.
Yeah, and like I said, a lot of these developers, we already discussed this a couple of weeks ago, said they sold more games from it being on Game Pass than they would have alone. Demos, this is what demos are for, damn it, except in this case it's paid and you get the full game. And if you want to keep it after it's, after it's taken off the service. I haven't finished Thomas Was Alone yet. I got to do it before it's permanently taken off. There's my there's my game recommendation for the week. Thomas Was Alone. Have either of you played Thomas Was Alone?
I haven't played that.
No.
Really? You've never played Thomas Was Alone?
Never heard of it.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say buy the game and experience it for yourself. I will give a little itty-bitty hint. Well, two little itty-bitty hints. The graphics are as primitive as you can find, and you'll be reminded of... Oh, damn. What's the name of that game again? I'm going to look at my Steam library for a moment. Oh, the Stanley Parable. Don't look at videos for it, because here's the thing. The game, if you really burn through it, you'll finish it in like 3 hours or 4 hours. But the story is minimalist and rich at the same time. Oh, I see why Theme Point Hospital is coming out on Game Pass. There's a free update right now on Steam. And it's called the Remix. So... Oh, okay, so... Huh. It's a digital recreation of all three of your favorite levels. Hogsport, Lower Bullocks, and Flattering. Are those from Theme Hospital, or are they from the... They're from 2-Point Hospital. But yeah, I might as well get back... See, talking about Theme Point Hospital just makes me want to get back into it now.
Do it.
It is really fun. And, even failure is fun. Anyways, last week we discussed talking about our favorite game trailers of all time. So, TJ, do you have a favorite game trailer of all time?
Absolutely. It's the announcement trailer for Guilty Gear Xrd. It was like one of the few game trailers that's ever made me cry in joy.
Okay.
And there was a lot of like, I think there was a lot of context behind that, but like the fact of the matter is, it was like it had been years since the Guilty Gear series had been in Arc System Works hands. It was like completely out of the blue surprise, a huge surprise, and then they took like the animation that so like at this point Street Fighter IV had already come out, so somebody was already doing the 2.5D thing. Arc System Works took that and applied their own style to it and made like this incredible, like 2.5D cel shaded animation for a fighting game that was like, it was so beautiful to look at. And like the way the trailer played out and the way it was like, it was Guilty Gear coming back after almost a decade of being gone. Like that is, I still like, look up that trailer every now and then just to watch it and just like remember those feelings when that music hit and when like the characters start fighting. It's incredible.
How about you, Scott? You already mentioned it in Skype.
Yes. Legend of Dragoon. Basically it's Basically, it starts out with a sword fight. You're watching two guys fighting with swords, and you know, you're thinking of other games that like that. And then at one point, one cuts the other's head off, and the other guy's head starts going on cruelly. Did you see that? He cut my head off. And he's acting like it's a blooper. And it was just the funniest thing to me to see that, because you totally didn't see it coming. And it's very tongue-in-cheek, kind of making fun of dramatic trailers. And just having like this blooper kind of thing happen, you know, and they just, it was just funny and very memorable to me.
So I have a long history with trailers. I remember the first one I saw that was on TV for Xevious. And it was interesting. They don't have any, there's no footage of that commercial, that television commercial. Are you devious enough to play Xevious? They only have audio, and it's really a shame that no one saved that, because it was the first ever commercial that I ever saw, and I think it really was the first video game commercial. Then you have the Super Smash Bros. The first Super Smash Brothers had the ones in these mascot outfits. You're my best friend, and they started whapping the hell out of it. They sort of beating the shit out of each other. Then you have the Halo 3 Believe series. And you have the Gears of War. Remember that one that used the song from Donnie Darko? You know, that everybody... Yeah. And I think it became an iconic... They always updated. They did Gears of War 3. They did the Johnny Cash Hurt one, too. But I was going to go with the Assassin's Creed trailer with Uncle's Lonely Souls on it. Then I remembered one commercial... One ad, one trailer that actually made me tear up, and that was the trailer to the Moon from 2011. I included the link. It was like watching a movie trailer for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, so basically that's what this game is. I don't know if you've ever heard of To the Moon. It actually was released on Switch recently.
I have heard of it.
It's about these doctors and this company, which allows you to change your memories to whatever you want, and the only condition is it'll be the last memory you ever have. Then you die. And the entire movie is about this dying guy, and they're rearranging his memory. But the trailer is so well done. I included the link in the thing. You can check it out. And I really didn't want to do a trailer that was that recent, you know, like 2011. I didn't even know it was I thought it was even more recent than that for some reason. They've had two sequels coming that came out for it, or they had one sequel and another sequel is coming out for it. The one who does the song for it, Everything's All Right, Laura Singgalli, she's the one who did the song There's a Zombie on Your Lawn for Plants vs. Zombies. And oh, by the way, that's number two on my list because PopCap released the ending song, the ending video, the ending cutscene as the trailer for Plants vs. Zombies. There's a zombie on your lawn. And you know the funniest thing is they released that trailer on April 1st, so people were unsure if we were to take it seriously as an actual game. They thought it might have been an April Fool's thing from PopCap. You know,
yeah, there's the
get ready to slow your plants. You know what? That's gonna be the next gaming flashback. Plants vs. Zombies. If Peggle was the major smash hit by PopCap, Plants vs. Zombies said, "Hold my beer." Let's talk a little bit about Plants vs. Zombies before we sign off. What is your thoughts on Plants vs. Zombies, DJ? The original one.
I think it's my mom's favorite game forever. It really is. Like, it is exemplary of like those, it's just like sit down, chill out, waste some time. Don't think about it too much. Just enjoy yourself. I mean, there is thinking about it a little bit. You think about what units you want to put on the grid and what will work best. But like, it really is kind of just like a feel good. Who cares if you lose? Just try again type thing.
Especially when the zombies go, no.
yeah, it is a very chill game, and I liked a lot of the little challenges that they would do, the, you know, to change things up where you can be the zombies and you're trying to invade a yard, or you're trying to, I guess these little mini games where you're trying to eat, like I think it was eat tombstones or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, at least had a crap ton of mini games at it. They were all
fun. Yeah. So,
anyways, so, we'll talk about it in depth next week. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Off the Shard.
And we will see you next week with some Plants vs. Zombies.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, yo.
And be sure to soil your plants.
Bye-bye.